Lockdown life. Still a bit weird, isn't it? So what happens when you've put so much effort towards achieving your dream of playing your sport professionally and then something like this happens? On this edition of the podcast, Middlesex and Scotland cricketer Olivia Ray takes us through exactly that. After working so hard towards becoming a professional player, everything is now on hold, thanks to the current situation we all find ourselves in. But this is just a small part of what is coming on this episode, as Olivia takes us through the mental health and anxiety battles she has gone through over the last few years. She's in a positive place now, but that wasn't really the case a few months back, and here she details what happened to her and, more importantly, how she managed to build herself a support network to help herself out of it. It takes a lot of bravery to put this kind of personal story out there, and I'll be the first to say that this particular conversation with Olivia was and is incredibly thought-provoking. In the uncertain world that we find ourselves in, it's also something that we all need to consider. Olivia, welcome to the podcast and welcome to the show. Lots really to talk about on this particular episode. First and foremost, because it's the second episode that we've actually recorded since the UK-wide lockdown was imposed. So it's very strange circumstances for everyone involved. I suppose my first question is kind of along the lines of how is lockdown for you? Because I think anyone who keeps any tabs on your social media activity or even the Middlesex cricket activity probably knows that you've been up to a fair few challenges and giving out a bit of advice to people as well.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me. Definitely lots to talk about. But yeah, starting with this weird situation is a good place to start. It's been interesting. I think, like, picking up what you said, I'm playing for Middlesex at the moment, and starting there, it's been awesome, the support and engagement that we've received from them. So that's really cool. The transition to move into a virtual cricketing world, I don't think anybody would have been prepared for. So trying to still train as a squad virtually and get together as a squad virtually has been like a challenge, but actually one that we've all taken in our stride. So we're doing things like virtual quizzes and virtual training sessions, and we've got a running competition, which is against counties that we would have been playing against at this time of the season. So yeah, weirdly, it feels like I'm kind of in a season because I'm running training during the week for a fixture at the weekend. So I've kind of got that sense of like I'm in a competition phase. So that was an absolutely awesome idea from Danny Warren at Middlesex, who's the head of women's cricket there. That's been really cool. So, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, because there's been lots of challenges on the Middlesex side of things. And it is, yeah. Even though we're in this weird situation where there's no sport to watch on TV, and technically speaking, there's no competitions to watch or anything like that, but actually we're in this kind of frame of mind where we're making up our own competitions and trying to keep something going. And to me anyway, it's a prime example of how, even though there's no sport's actually still going and it's still keeping people together. And what you've been doing with Middlesex, where you've been taking on Essex, for example, in various challenges, seems to be a prime example of that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think probably the reason why I'm talking about this, initially is because it has been one of the main things that's got me through this challenging situation, because you felt a real sense of loss when it happened. Like, you know, you'd lost the cricket season, you'd lost your training sessions, your ability to go to the gym and your ability to do anything that you were doing before as a team. And that feeling of loss, like quite quickly being replaced by these new ideas, is just massive. But it didn't actually happen straight away, just to add that. So I did have to be a little bit creative early on my own, whilst obviously Middlesex were putting their heads together about what they can do. So we can talk about that if you want.
Yeah, I was going to say then, what were the main challenges at the start when, you know, we were, I think when we first met, which was February time, I think, and everything was geared up towards a new season and to selection. And then within the space of 3 weeks, the world changed and all of that changed. So how, as a player, do you actually process that first and foremost?
Honestly, it's, you know, it's so typical, really. Like, I make a decision, not that I'm making this all about me, but I make a decision sort of to focus on my cricket, what would have been at the end of last season, take a step back from my coaching, take a massive cut financially, to focus on playing, and then a global pandemic kind of happens. Like, you know, I'm laughing, it's obviously not funny at all, but sometimes, you know, I'm just trying so hard to stay positive and to keep perspective. But what I'm saying is, I did a lot of preparation, like before this all happened. I'd done a lot of preparation mentally, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like if you get yourself prepared physically for competition, the whole point is like so that you can cope with the demands of that competition. So one of the things I've been working on before this was making sure that I was mentally prepared to cope with the demands of not just cricket but life. And so as much as it was kind of annoying timing that I got prepared, it's also the best because I'd prepared myself mentally as well that I've been able, I've got that, the skills to cope with this situation, if that makes any sort of sense.
But in terms of preparing yourself mentally, what sort of things were you focusing on in particular with regards to yourself?
Yeah, I mean, end of last season, we'd got communicated to by the powers that be, and the ECB what was happening with the women's game. There'd been a lot of uncertainty before that. We didn't know as players exactly how it was going to look. So end of the season, we finally got that that guidance as to what was happening. And it was about the professionalism of the women's game. So come the end of the season, when I made that decision to focus on playing, it had been because I'd had this kind of a lot of internal struggles about, oh, I'm coaching, I need to make a living out of coaching. But playing cricket is what I've always wanted to do. And it's been an absolute dream to play cricket professionally and to keep playing as long as I can. And like, but being torn between obviously being an amateur and trying to earn enough money and to think, oh my, you know, like it was constant internal struggles. And therefore that made me struggle a lot mentally and a lot of my mental health. So what I'm saying is at the start of that new decision or that new beginning for me to focus on playing again, I had to put a lot of work in mentally in order to get to that point in the first place. So things that I did, I've got a really good support network. Talking through these things with people that that you trust, that know you and believe in you and back you and basically say, look, this is what you want to do. Okay, we're going to collectively support you to do it. Was massive. Like I think when you're making big decisions in life and when you're struggling with your mental health, it's just so important to have people to talk to. And I was so lucky that I'm not going to say lucky because it's not the case. I worked really hard to get a support network of people. And I was brave enough to start talking to them about my mental health and my struggles. So that is the biggest thing, I think, when you talk about mental preparation. For me, the biggest thing was talking about what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. And I'll touch on that in a moment. But in case anyone is particularly wondering about those changes that were coming into the women's game, because I'm sure someone like Will, who's obviously very well up on cricket, will be able to reel off the changes here, there and everywhere. But in terms of you, the players, what were those changes that basically brought along that big life decision that you had to make?
Yeah, no, for sure. So those changes are obviously massively positive changes. And it was so far in England and Wales, we've seen the England women's team as the only professional players. Okay, so they're the only females that were getting paid to play cricket. The new changes saw the 100 come in. So the women's 100 was going to pay players to play, regardless of whether you had an England contract. If you were in any of those teams, you'd be paid for that for the duration of that tournament. Also, there's going to be 40 new domestic contracts up for grabs, which is seriously exciting for players out with the England setup. So yeah, I mean that's amazing, and that kind of came in, and that was there was a long process. Obviously, the people at the top were having to sort of get their heads around how this was going to work. And yeah, once that was communicated to us, I think a lot of us that were slightly older players, maybe that had been in other jobs or thinking about other careers, and we were left with this kind of big decision of we could finally get an opportunity to be a professional cricketer. Although the money maybe not be the biggest income in the world, I think we're very aware that it's a start that could lead on to something even greater.
Yeah, and like you said before, it was essentially what you dreamed of, really, to be able to play the game that you love professionally. And a lot, I think I saw it firsthand with you as well, as the work that you put in was, obviously it was great from your point of view, but it seemed to stress you out quite a lot, if that's fair to say. Or at least it was playing on your mind quite a bit, because it was the week of the selection that we met first.
When we met, I wasn't sure whether I'd been reselected back into the Middlesex first team. So that was one of the first hurdles I had to get over, because I've sat there and made a massive sacrifice, I suppose, of putting on hold my coaching stuff. And I needed to at least get to that first team for Middlesex first and foremost, which was still actually non-professional. But I knew from that there was a platform to then get selected into other teams. But yeah, so when I met you, I was touch and go, because I thought, you know, if this doesn't happen, A, I know I've given my all, but if this doesn't happen, it's going to be an even trickier decision for me to make, because the mountain just would have been even bigger to climb. Hmm. But I do like climbing mountains. So.
And essentially, you climbed that particular mountain as well before, obviously, the world changed. And we are where we're at now. I mean, in terms of that, does anyone know, do you know, as to what happens next with regards to your place in the team, or whether you have to go through the whole process again, or is it still, I suppose, like many things right now, up in the air?
Everything's up in the air. I mean, obviously, we got the news that the 100 has been postponed till next year. That came in yesterday.
Yeah, that came in yesterday.
So on that, I think that, you know, the decision's been made. And for me, a mindset and an attitude that I've had throughout this whole weird period of time is kind of like perspective. And you know, these kind of news things that are coming in, like cricket season's cancelled or the 100's cancelled, like I'm prepared for that. You know, I'm well aware that, you know, keeping safe and saving lives is the most important thing right now. Yes, it's sad that we're not playing cricket, and yes, it's sad that the 100's been postponed, but it's like also having that hope that, you know, when it's not like it's been stopped. Yeah, okay, postponed is quite a final word, but it's been put on pause. Like, we're literally pressing pause, and then we'll press replay, and it will be back where we started. I don't believe we've lost anything significantly. The work has been put in. That tournament will happen, and it will have a significant impact on women's game. So to answer your question, I'm not very good at answering questions, I've realised. I do go off on a lot of tangents. Basically, yes, we don't really know, but the most important thing is that players are going to be supported during this time, if that makes sense.
I think that was one of the big things you'd mentioned to me, is how much support there had actually been for the players, because it would be easy to leave that as an afterthought.
Yeah, I think that's something that has definitely improved, and even more so during this lockdown period that we're in. sort of the welfare support and the acknowledgement of what we go through as female players who haven't been paid to do what we do, who haven't had that kind of security in order to be able to solely focus on playing. And now we're sort of in this weird period of uncertainty and change, like that welfare support and that keeping us together and communicating with us has just been amazing. So I think what I'm trying to say is that we're in this period of uncertainty in cricket because we're in this period of uncertainty in the world. So as long as we're communicated with and supported, that it doesn't have to be as drastic and scary as sometimes we might try to convince ourselves it is.
Exactly. And then there's loads of things you can work on in the background as well if you've got that particular support, I think. Moving on then to sort of more of the mental health discussion that you've talked about a little bit already, and sort of the things you were going through before, you know, you coming up to this big selection moment. I'm not sure if you want to pick apart any bits of that, because I have a few questions already lined up, but do you want to just sort of give us an outline as to maybe, I suppose you mentioned the things that you were torn between in your head, and if you want to sort of mention what they were in more detail.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think there's been many times in my life where I've felt torn, and feeling torn isn't a nice feeling to have, and the sort of the effect that then has on mental health is quite drastic at times, really, to be honest. So talking about this particular feeling of being torn, look, I'm 32 now. I keep thinking I'm 31, but it's just because I just turned 32. 32 now, so starting to think, oh, you know what, should I still be trying to play? Because surely I should be trying to earn a bit more money and like have some more savings and like think about all this boring stuff like pensions and stuff, but it's important, right? So that you've kind of got, I've got that going on in the back of my mind. I'm thinking, I feel like so behind in that kind of stuff, but then I've got this, like, no other way to describe it, but burning passion to still continue to pursue my dream. And then you see that opportunity of maybe there's a chance for me to still be a professional cricketer. So in so many ways, like, it's a no-brainer, because what we do is we, you know, as a coach, as a mentor, is I tell someone, follow your dreams. But obviously when you become an adult, that kind of like naivety goes away a little bit, and you start to think about all of these things, like, is it really practical to do this, you know, and what if I don't make it into the teams and all of this is for nothing? And you kind of get, so I was torn between, like, it's almost like a negative mindset and a positive mindset, or like my childhood dream and then my adult practicalities. And it was just like, you know, I'm kind of probably downplaying it a lot, to be honest, but obviously, I'm in a really positive place now, and I made a decision to continue playing cricket. But it was really, really difficult, really difficult, because it was a risk. It was literally like, I'm just going to step out and risk everything. Or I thought I was risking everything to just give this one like final go. And that was, yeah, it was tearing me up a lot, I think, inside for probably a period of maybe 4 or 5 months while we were waiting to hear what was actually going to happen. I'd launched my coaching business, you know. I'd like kind of launched this whole thing, which really I wanted to launch that. Or like if you're a professional sports person, you launch that stuff when your career's finished, really.
So then it's almost a case of you having to allow yourself, I suppose, to have two passions, i.e. the cricket and also the coaching. Because I think a lot of people probably, it's that adult life and what adult life tells you to focus on the sensible stuff and exactly. Being sensible with finances and things like that, and to not directly but almost subconsciously tell you not to follow those passions because it's not a sensible passion to follow, if that makes any remote sense from what I'm trying to say.
But actually, I'm not a very sensible person. So being true to myself, I've always been a little bit out of the box. And I think for me, it's also like all of the struggles and setbacks I've had, just pushing on an extra bit to maybe get the big reward. I mean, that's why we do what we do, right? It would be like giving up on the final hurdle for me to just stop playing. I only want to stop playing when my body is broken, to be honest.
And the world needs people who aren't sensible. One thing I wanted to touch on that you mentioned before is the support network side of things, because it's one thing I don't think I've actually properly picked up on with any other guest, because you often talk about having that support network and it's just being there, but you mentioned about actually like making it or taking it upon yourself to make sure that support network was there. How did you go about that, and how do you first recognize for yourself that you need to do that?
I mean, this is massive, and it's actually such an important point, because I sort of say, and we hear a lot and read a lot about how it's really important to talk and open up about your mental health, but it's not as simple as that, because where do you go and who do you talk to? And it's just such a scary prospect. And I think one thing I realized having moved from Scotland to London only, 2.5 years ago, I didn't grow up in London. I didn't have a network of friends. I have some family here, but very, very small amount of people that really knew me for me. So one of the things that I'd identified was I needed to have people around me. But it wasn't easy. It wasn't like I just called a few people up or like met some people that, you know, that in the new jobs I had or new teams I had, I'd be like, oh, do you fancy being part of my support network? It doesn't work like that. So it was a long process. And I think for about a year and a half, I was having to settle into a new place while struggling mentally. And it was really, really difficult. So I guess I'll tell you how my support network organically evolved. And then also how I was then also able to maybe craft it a bit more after that initial like organic way it happened. Mm-hmm. First of all, I just started to be myself completely, not just in person with people, but also on social media. So using my platform on social media to actually open up and talk about my struggles, I was starting to really create like an authentic version of myself, which I also then helped me replicate that in person as well, if that makes sense.
That's a big thing to do though as well, isn't it? Just
massively.
To put yourself out there, because a lot of people could automatically put up that shield, I suppose.
I think I was struggling so much. But I also had this newfound energy of like, I just want to grab life and make the most out of it. So it's like, I'm struggling so much, but I also just want to put myself out there, because what's the worst that can happen? I'm already feeling the worst I could possibly feel, but I might get some support. Like, or it's going to make it so much easier for me to walk into a training session or go into a group of people when they know what I'm going through, so I'm not internalizing it and feeling all these things. So basically, on the back of that, I got some people, I think, who would reach out to me, and it just all kind of went on to the next thing, So then I got, I became an ambassador for Street Child United. Actually, no, I didn't become an ambassador. That's not how it worked. I got invited to play cricket as part of an All-Stars team through Street Child United. And that was by my captain, Naomi Dittani, who I'd been able to talk to a little bit about who I am, like, and my struggles through playing cricket and the fact that I'd started my coaching business. And because I've been myself, like, she's gone, Ollie's a great person for me to ask to come and be part of this team. I don't think I've explained that hugely well. Basically, I got to be part of this All-Stars cricket team at Street Child United because I'd kind of been myself and someone had gone, this is great for Ollie. So I started to get these experiences and be around people, but being completely who I was and being completely open about my struggles. That makes sense?
Yeah.
And then playing in that game, I met Kerri-Anne Payne, who, open water swimmer, amazing person. And we were stood on one of the balconies at Lord's looking over the pitch after the game. And I just started chatting to her about the fact that I struggled with anxiety. And it was just the most normal flowing conversation. It wasn't like a shock thing or she didn't feel awkward. She didn't make me feel awkward. We just started chatting about it. And then after that, I met up for a coffee and like she's been a massive part of my support network ever since. And then from that, I think I just learned about if you talk to someone about your struggles and they feel uncomfortable and they don't know what to say and they don't, believe you, worst case scenario, it doesn't matter because there are people out there that do. So when you start talking to people and they understand you, maybe they've been through it too, and just focus on that and just, I just don't let maybe a negative experience of opening up and talking about stuff affect or impact you doing that again, because there are people out there. And the second thing is that you kind of touched on, the support network won't just be there. So you can't just expect that people are going to check in with you. People are going to understand what's going on. And it's hard when you're struggling, but you've got to be proactive and you've got to open up, particularly whilst there's still not necessarily always those structures and places within teams, organisations where they've got a free-flowing way of talking about your mental health and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. Lots to pick up on there. And I suppose I'll start with Kerri-Anne Payne because you've mentioned her a few times about how much of an influence she's been on you on that side of things. And I think it was through her that you ended up doing this first, I suppose I call it a live panel in front of, you know, an actual group of people talking about the stuff that you're talking about. And that's a big step in itself.
Oh, unbelievable. Like I said, it just kind of, everything just kind of evolves from like opening up, being yourself, meeting people who support you for you, lift you up. And like, yeah, Kerri-Anne, like I said, we started to kind of have regular catch-ups where she was sort of mentoring me and supporting me. And so she messaged me one day. To be honest, I'd actually been having a really tough time. I got this message and it said, do you basically fancy doing a Q&A at a dinner, black tie event, going on a Q&A panel? And in my head, I was like, oh, I just don't know if I can do this. Like, started to feel really anxious and nervous at the thought of it, felt a bit sick. But like I said, Kerri-Anne's massive support to me, and her support obviously lifts me. Somebody like that who believes in you, it was a massive confidence boost. And there was just part of me that just said, you know what, this opportunity is first of all too good to miss, but also it was just the extra little bits of lines that Kerri-Anne puts in when she says stuff that help. Like, don't worry, even on the day, if you feel like you can't do it, I'll go on stage and do it for you. And it's like, wow, because that's the thing. It's like when you're struggling in those ways, you know, just even hearing that, like anything that somebody can do to reduce pressure from you is massive. And just to know that, like, it's not like, right, I want you to go and do this and I'm not going to support you in any way. It's like, I want you to do this because I believe you can do this, was first of all, was a really important thing. But I'm going to support you in any way that you can. And also, you know what? You don't actually have to do it, because, you know, it's just for me to help you and for you to get your message across to help other people. But don't put yourself through anything unnecessary in order to do it.
Yeah, it lifts that pressure somewhat, doesn't it?
Yeah, if that makes sense. And that's from knowing me and me being able to have also communicated how I've struggled and the things that... the things that I go through. But I did the Q&A.
And how did it go?
really well. Yeah, really, really well. It was so nerve-wracking. There's actually a really funny part of it, which I might as well say. So it was really nerve-wracking, but I went up there and answered the questions. The host was amazing. She also said, look, I actually wanted to come to you first, but don't worry if you don't want to. But I was like, no, let's do it. Let's go for it. And the way that she was and the way that she asked questions and supported me was amazing. Basically, there's a massive theme here, like support is invaluable. But yeah, so anyway, I did the whole thing. And then when I got home, like I'd bought the dress I was wearing like on the day. And I think I'd been so nervous in like preparation to it. And when I got changed, I realized like all the labels were still on the dress. Like massively, like massive wad of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that my first Q&A that I did and all that, I just think it's actually quite funny that that was happening the whole time. And I was just so unaware, just like, yeah.
I'm sure no one would have noticed.
No one noticed, no. But I didn't notice, which is kind of worrying. Yeah.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Network now, considering you know, lockdown and everything, I suppose the key message then from your perspective is to make sure that you still factor in that time to have those conversations with people, or just have that break from life, whether it's the family quiz nights, which I know is one of yours, and or just little, you know, Zoom, Skype sessions, whatever it might be, here and there, to, because I think it could be so easy for someone now just to not necessarily know that they might shut themselves off, and that they still have to put themselves out there during this current situation we're living in.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, like I said, I kind of put that work in prior to lockdown to have a support network. I mentioned Kerri-Anne, but also starting to open up to some of my teammates. So there's people that were there, but I suppose, are we thinking worst case scenario, someone who's really feeling like maybe they don't have anybody to talk to, or and I think in that instance, I'd hope that there, you know, if you're part of a team right now, that there are some opportunities being created from that top level down. Like I said, I know it maybe hasn't been the case for me, or I've said to be proactive, but I also know how hard that is. So I'm hoping that organizations, teams are creating that opportunity for players to reach out. So yeah, that's something that I just hope is happening, if that makes sense. Like, and if there is somebody in a situation where they are on their own, then I think that there's got to be a flaw at some point in something that they're involved with, if there isn't somebody checking in during this time.
Yeah.
But to also say that if you are in that situation, as unfortunate as it is, that you're not alone, and there is support available. You can call the Samaritans, for instance. You know, there's always somebody to talk to. I know that it's hard to talk to your friends and family for the first time to tell them that you're struggling. Because sometimes the people that are closest to you, it's hard because you don't want to upset them. You don't want to feel like, not even that you've let them down, but you don't want them to take on any feelings of responsibility or blame for what you're going through. So sometimes the best thing you can do is pick up the phone and talk to someone completely neutral. And that might be somewhere like the Samaritans, which I've done myself. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying that from experience, and I think that they're a very good option to call.
Yeah, them, and there are so many others, whether it's Mind or someone like that you can get in touch with. That are completely neutral and do listen when you are going through things like that. How important is it as well? This is where I bring in the Street Child work that you've been doing, to have that as a separate focus, because Having something like that seems to be something you thrive off as well, and it's obviously got benefits for both yourself being part of something like that, but also all the children and people who use that charity as well.
100%. I talk about the Mintridge Foundation here as well. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because obviously I made that massive decision to focus on cricket, but one of the big things that I also learned making that decision and getting my support network, getting opportunities with Street Child United and now the Mintridge Foundation, was that cricket, you know, is my passion and it's my dream to be a cricketer, but I've got a purpose so much further beyond that. And that when I'm struggling with cricket stuff, like, oh, will I get selected in the teams? I know I'm giving everything to do it, and obviously I know that that's what I want, but having being an ambassador for Street Child United and being an ambassador for Mintridge Foundation, it does give me that extra bit of purpose, motivation. And I just know that beyond playing cricket, there's something there for me. Mm-hmm. And it's incredibly rewarding. And it's been amazing during this time. The challenges that I've done in aid of both Street Child United and Mintridge Foundation, and also the work that I'm doing for both as well, is invaluable. Helping others is something that's always been important to me. But of course, you do have to make sure that you're okay first.
Yeah, exactly. First and foremost. And we do mention the Mintridge Foundation in particular. And this is the week where I have, and I know you have as well, been finishing off our 771 challenges for the Mintridge Foundation, which I think we've both found has been a really useful task to focus on during this. And it's been a nice distraction from all the doom that there's been out there in the world. And I mean, the work that the Mintridge Foundation does with children and things like that, and how important is that to you? Because Alex obviously told me that you were probably the one ambassador who signed up quicker than anyone else. It was literally the forms landed in your email inbox and then they were done by the following day. So clearly it's something that you're passionate about and have been passionate about since day one, really.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard about it from you, it just felt everything was coming together in one place. So it's my sport, my cricket, obviously, is there. My profile as a player, helping other people, mentoring young people, and utilizing my experiences of mental health struggles to help others. It just, everything was coming together, and it was just those, that kind of an opportunity where it just felt right. And I think there's been maybe things that have come my way or times in my life where I've been doing things, and it just shows that when the right opportunities are there, they do 100% just feel right. And again, I think it all built in from everything that I was doing about opening up, being vulnerable. And I'm doing things now and I haven't hidden anything about myself. Mm-hmm. And I think that because obviously like I, the age that I'm at now and the fact that I've struggled for quite a long time, like, for a good first part of, say, 5-6 years of me struggling, I wasn't able to maybe talk about that because mental health awareness was not great and people didn't talk about it. So I was not really being myself, and I was in situations where I was struggling, but I was, you know what, and it all led to me being very unhappy. Whilst now I'm so open about my struggles, I still have really, really tough days and I have to let people down, but everybody that I'm working for, talking to, connecting with, understands me for me. And the Mintridge Foundation was just like, just one of those organizations. And on that, I'm mentoring some young athletes at the moment. And it's brilliant. It's another thing to do through lockdown. I absolutely love it.
And I suppose the messages that you're giving to these young athletes, are those the messages that you think you needed to hear when you were in their position or when you were their age, and that it's only now really that we're starting to recognize how important that is, so that anyone in, who might come across the same challenges that you have or anyone else have got the tools really to be able to cope with those.
100%. I think that I don't look back with resentment because I don't think that's healthy. I look back and obviously I see the lack of support that was in place just because of the state of how things were at the time. You know, it was never anything personal. You know, awareness is getting more and more and more. But yeah, I definitely think, you know, imagine if, I think to myself, imagine if I'd had a mentor, you know, what that would have meant for me and the impact that could have had. So definitely just want to be the best mentor I can and make sure that people just need to be listened to as well. Like, I can't assume that anybody's going through exactly what I went through and all of that kind of stuff. So it's just having someone to listen to get to know you and what works for you, which is exactly what I do as a coach. It's that kind of listening and getting to know your players and then facilitating them to be able to take control of their own life. Because you know, the whole point about support network is they support you. You go put yourself out there, you go into the arena and you do your thing, but they're there whatever happens. So you know that whether you fail, whether you succeed, that you've got that support. But it's a lot more powerful to know that it's actually you, though, out there doing it. It's not anybody else telling you what to do. They're just supporting you to do it.
Do you think we still have to go, I suppose, as a society, really, have some way to go to recognise how important the issues surrounding mental health are? One of the things I've said about the whole lockdown period is it's not just with mental health, but a lot of things in society is it's highlighted what was wrong in the first place, whether that's, you know, living accommodation standards for certain people. But I think it's probably highlighted in a way that we haven't had before just how important your mental health is and how important it is not to neglect it.
Yeah, I think one thing I've realised through this time is obviously the support that we've received from Middlesex, for example, has been incredible during this time. What that has highlighted to me is that when you're struggling with your mental health, you're in a very similar situation to what we're in with lockdown. You find yourself in your home. You find yourself maybe only being able to get out once a day, if that. You've kind of got restrictions. You find yourself in a situation where you're actually unable to do a huge amount. You might have communicated that to some people, but maybe they didn't fully understand what that meant. But because we're all in this position now where we're kind of restricted in a very similar way to people that might be having a bad mental health day or a bad period of time where they're really struggling, is that you cannot underestimate the power of checking in with people. And I've had people check in with me more so than ever, and like, long may it continue, to be honest. I think that it highlighted that, and we're so much closer as a team from this, and I think like we always will be now. So it's not so much highlighting anything was wrong, because that's me saying that was stuff that was wrong. It's not even that. It's just that if you don't go through something, you don't know, you don't understand it. And I think that it's given people a real awareness on what it might be like to be struggling so much with your mental health that you can't go outside and you can't do this, and that you need that virtual support. You need those people checking in. Does that make sense?
Totally. Because I think it's the position that we will find ourselves in is it's given everyone maybe a little snapshot of what it's like to be isolated. Not necessarily that we're all cut off for everything, because we've got the benefits of technology, but, you know, we don't go into work now. We don't go play sports with our team members now in the same way that we used to. So it's a little snapshot of what it does feel like to be isolated, I think, that people are getting a bit of a taste of and maybe are recognising the issues there.
Yeah, and I think obviously there's different levels of mental health, and there's people that struggle in many different ways. But isolation is something that, no matter what your mental health struggle is, isolation is going to add magnitude to that situation. So we don't want people to be isolated. However extreme their mental health struggles are, whatever condition they're struggling with, I think what we've learned as society now is how important it is to check in with our community. There's old people maybe living in isolation all the time that you maybe don't realise what they're going through, and all of these new community WhatsApp groups, And just that awareness, and like, I've signed up to be an NHS volunteer responder, and, you know, things like that, realizing that there are people that need their shopping brought to them because they can't go out. Actually, there's people struggling, and there might be people struggling post-COVID, with whether it's a physical thing or a mental thing, that they might need people to actually still do those kind of things for them. And it could really help significantly. It could significantly reduce a lot of the struggles that some people go through. Because taking that isolation factor out of the way and feeling supported and feeling like you've got a sense of community around you is really important.
Yeah, and certainly I for one hope that that's something we learn from and build on in the future once we get back to some semblance of normality. One last question I've got, kind of surrounding the mental health side of things, and it's one thing we've mentioned between ourselves at one point, and I think is probably quite important to highlight, and that's how you shouldn't put pressure on yourself to do any of this, because it is utterly daunting to, I suppose, do what you did and put yourself out there on social media and talk about it in the first place. Likewise, it's also daunting when, I suppose, we're in the initial days of lockdown and everyone thought we've all got so much time now, or so much extra time in our homes, we can learn all these new skills, do all these extra bits and bobs, and it just doesn't actually work that way, and that you shouldn't feel in the position to put pressure on yourself to achieve all these different aspects. So I know that's something I suppose you've had to experience yourself too, likewise myself, and I'm sure a lot of other people, about how important it is not to put that pressure on yourself when we're in this situation.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think I sort of explained why I was able to put myself out there, and I think it's a long, many years of struggle, many years of going through stuff on my own, and feeling that because I had a couple of positive experiences of talking about mental health and people receiving it well, I just thought, I've got nothing to lose but to do it. But of course, you know, it's not an easy step to take. And I know there will be many, many people struggling on their own and struggling to take that first step to talk. So by no means me talking about it today is that I just sort of was struggling one day and then talked about it the next. You know, actually, it was many, many years of struggles, which I hope nobody has to go through. Awareness has increased. We've got Samaritans, we've got Mind, we've got all of these people that we can talk to. And there's absolutely no pressure. I think when the time is right, it's finding that tiny little step that you can do, whatever that might be. So for me, when I was having really, really bad mental health days, you know, getting out of bed seemed like Mount Everest to me. But the first thing was like, just go. And it didn't happen for maybe a week, 2 weeks, but just go make yourself a cup of tea. Like, making myself a cup of tea was a tiny little step, but suddenly I'm out of bed. Maybe I go back in, I don't know, but then I might find another little step to do. So there's no pressure. And also, social media can be a difficult place sometimes, because, you know, you see all these home workouts and you see all of these like things that people are doing, like learning different languages. And I did, I went through that first week of lockdown. I was like, right, I need to invent something, you know. Mm-hmm. And my brother, who's part of my support network, was just saying, hold on a second. Like, you don't need to do anything differently. Like, you've still got the same goal. You're still trying to build yourself up and work on your mental health, stay fit. You're a cricketer still, nothing's changed. You know, there's no pressure to do anything other than keep yourself safe and keep others safe. You know, we're all doing a massively honourable thing by taking the advice of the government and doing those things. And it's challenging, you know, we're missing things that we do, missing people that we usually see. I was going to say something else. Yeah, what I was going to say is I've obviously spoken quite a lot and quite positively about things, because that's kind of where I'm at. I'm obviously having a great day as well. But things that let's talk a little bit about quickly about things I've not been able to do, just to show to people that, again, it's okay. So, yes, I've been going out running most days. Yes, I've done the challenges for Middlesex, but I haven't been able to do any of the online workouts. I haven't managed to get my head around doing circuit training because I'm finding it too overwhelming. But what I'm doing is I'm not beating myself up about that because I'm focusing on the things that I am doing, and there's no pressure and there's nobody sat there saying, oh, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, because everybody understands that it's a difficult situation. And on that, let's please take that understanding out of COVID and onto people that struggle with their mental health all the time and realize that this is so similar. So if there's somebody that can't make a training session or they can't do this, it's that same feeling that you need to give them, that security and support, that it's okay. It really doesn't matter, because having this day off is what you need, just like you need to rest your knee when you've injured it. Because I'm feeling the support more than I ever have in my life. And I just really hope it continues.
Likewise, back everything that you just said as well. I think it's so important just to realise how important it is just to give your mind a break as well as everything else that is going on. And there's no reason to pressure yourself into, you know, ticking off all these various bits that you might have on a to-do list or a wish list, whether it's doing all these exercises or learning Italian was my one. And I haven't even started.
Well, I wanted to learn Spanish.
See? Same boat.
No, but on a serious note, if there is anybody that is sat there thinking, I haven't done this, I haven't done that, or I should have achieved this, you know, those thoughts really don't serve any positive purpose. You know, focus on the things that you are doing. And, the steps that feel right, you know, that's what's important. So just think, what can I do right now? And I've sat at my desk and I've gone, what can I do right now? And I've drawn a picture that looks like a 9-year-old drew it. But I sat there and I was like, I can do this. And it's amazing how just something as little as that can then just kickstart something else in your day. But it doesn't matter how small it is. And it doesn't matter if it's not the online class that you were supposed to do. If it's drawing a picture, that's brilliant.
Exactly. And I look forward to seeing some of those pictures on your Twitter feed as well. I'm sure they need to see the light of day.
I might do, yeah.
I'll hold you to that one. This is a slightly weird one, because usually I finish up podcasts by asking what's next, what's happening in your life. But we're all sort of in the I don't know sort of stage. We don't know what's happening next. So I suppose in terms of your lockdown life, are there any little tips that you might have for someone away from maybe the mental health side of things, just to that have made things a little bit nicer, more pleasant, easier for you, or some fun activities, whether it's drawing pictures, that you've found particularly helpful?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, talking to people what works for me, having lots of conversations, and having a laugh if you can, has been really important. Running, I hated running on my own before this because I'm a team player, like doing things with a team, for a team. But a shift in mindset to thinking, well, actually, me going out running is getting myself fit, keeping myself healthy, and that's actually going to benefit my team. So that was quite a nice little mindset shift for that. Running, but also the way that I run, I started running just like trying to go 100% all the time. And it was like really unpleasant. But actually, you don't have to. Just go for a little jog. So I'm now jogging. It's like maybe 3 or 4 times a week and pushing myself maybe twice. And it's like you're outside, you're just jogging. Like, why was I racing? Honestly, why was I doing that?
Exactly. I think there's so much to take from that.
Honestly. Mm-hmm. And then the other things are, so I've got a little bit of space. I've got a terrace, which is always going to be my terrace now. It's like really weird, it's become like my little office, and it's just being creative. So getting all my coaching equipment out, maybe some like household items, whatever, and just being like, right, what drills can I come up with? And I'm videoing it and I'm putting it on my socials, not to be like, you must do this in lockdown, but actually it was a task for me because I got to do it, video it, put it out there, and just maybe makes people gives them an idea or makes them smile. So that's been really cool. I do a grateful list before I go to bed every night, even throughout. Before this, I was doing it, but especially now, because I do actually struggle more because I'm doing less with my day and it's all my world's become very small. But yeah, finding five things I'm grateful for every day is important. What else? I'm playing Scrabble with my mum, but I'm not entirely sure I actually enjoy it.
How are the rankings in the family quiz?
Well, again, I'm with my mum, and we don't win. But it's going between people in the family, but I haven't won yet with my mum. So, but yeah, it's fun. It's great, like, to check in with the family, which we all live in different parts of the UK. So again, we probably weren't checking in with each other enough. And it's just like a regular slot on a Saturday night, but it also makes me realise what day of the week it is, because it gets to Saturday. So, oh, family quiz night. Middlesex, we do stuff on a Thursday night. We have a little social. But yeah, I think above all, though, it's just like, remove that pressure, do what feels right, and just those that find that first little step. Because mm-hmm. I think quite often we're always looking at the wrong step. So if you feel like you can't do anything, it's because the thing you're trying to do isn't right for you right there.
And I suppose my final rounding off question is, and this is one of those where we haven't actually talked all that much about your sport other than right at the beginning, because there's been plenty to talk about anyway. But I suppose I'll leave it into one big overarching question, and that is cricket, because this podcast being what it is, I always like to showcase what a sport can do for someone and why it's such a good thing for people to get involved with. So the big question is cricket and cricket's relationship with you, and what has cricket actually given you as a person?
That's a big question. Let's see how many times I can get sidetracked in this answer. You know what? I was actually doing an interview the other day to be part of a book for the Mintridge Foundation. And what came about that is that cricket has been both the best and worst thing for me. and that's a completely honest truth. It has done so much for me in terms of the friendships that I've made, the places I've travelled to, and in terms of the things that maybe haven't gone so well, like the struggles of trying to play as a female cricketer, where you maybe don't get the support, recognition, funding that you deserve, we all deserve as female athletes, has provided a lot of struggles. But even on that, I think the struggles that we've gone through and that you do go through competing in sport, for me, cricket, they can be turned into positives, because, you know, like when I stop playing and go into life, I've got this resilience now to be able to kind of cope with setbacks. But like talking about cricket as a game, like absolutely love cricket, always have. Grew up watching cricket, listening to Test Match Special. My grandma was like the biggest fan. And I saw how it like brought my family together. So cousins, uncles, grandma, mum, dad, everyone going to watch Durham County play, occasionally getting tickets for Test matches, although they were quite expensive. They still are quite expensive, so it's not always accessible to everyone. Okay, this sounds like I want like them to reduce ticket prices or something. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, like, as you know, I saw it brought my family together, and it's a brilliant sport for that. It's a game like no other, in the sense that every single game of cricket is different. Like, and I swear I still like learned a new rule last year, but I can't remember what it was. But it's like, it's just like the amount of rules and things that happen in the game and where it can go. You know, it's for me, like for someone who loses focus quite easily, you might have been able to tell. It's great for that, in the sense that you just don't know what's going to happen. And on the flip side, it's also really helped my focus, because when I'm out in the middle batting, there's literally nowhere else I'd rather be. I don't want to get out because I don't want to have to sit and be bored on the sideline. But I absolutely love it. Like the team element, the tactical element, and the individual element, where you know that you've got to at times be on your own and do something massive for the team. I think that really appeals to my character. because I like to do things for others. And I think in cricket, you have that unique ability within the game to go out and pull off something as an individual, like Ben Stokes. I mean, like, you know, he's weirdly enough, like, obviously he's part of a team, but he was like on his, it was like, you might as well have taken all the fielders out and the rest of his team and just put him there because of what he did was extraordinary. But it's that, you know what I mean? Like, no other sport you can do that.
You can have those individual moments of brilliance, but still share it collectively with your team.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Just something's coming to my head on cricket. And I guess this might just be a sport-wide thing, but I think what's massive, especially if you've maybe struggled mentally, or for me, I had some difficulties within my home environment growing up. And if you're going, you know, onto a sports field, a cricket pitch, you've got a team around you, you've got collective visions and goals, and you kind of like, your worries kind of melt away for that period of time. And I think that that's massive, and a massive thing that sport and cricket can do for people. And you make friends for life, and you've got a support network of people around you always. So
yeah, and yeah. Which is a lot like what me and Will have said. Obviously, we love our sport. We never ever got to sort of an elite standard whatsoever, anything like that. But even if you're just doing it at the grassroots, you do make friends for life, and it's something that you get so much out of it, not just the activity side of things. Which is essentially why this show exists, really.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
You know, exactly. Sport's unique ability to unite people. And even the fact that it's even able to do that now, when we can't even go out and play it, just shows the teams, the challenge, the virtual challenges, that collectiveness. And it kind of like, yeah, for me, like, I'm not over consuming all the negativity that's going on in the world right now. I care, I'm doing my bit, but sport and my team is kind of an escapism to help stay positive in challenging times.
Exactly. Before I round up as well, Sports Build Squad finished their 7-7-1 Mintridge Marathon on Thursday. So the funding page is still there on our Twitter, so please go and find it. I presume you're exactly the same. Where can we find your funding page?
So I don't have a funding page. I was just directing people to go and donate on the main page. So maybe if anybody wanted to support me, they could just donate to your page. That would probably be cool.
I'll happily take that if anyone wants to. It's all going to the same cause anyway. And I think last I looked, bearing in mind today is Friday as we're recording, it's around 3,200 or just above that that's been raised so far, which
Amazing. Is
pretty impressive. Pretty impressive group effort, really. But with that, it's where I bring this particular episode to a close. I think probably one of our most thought-provoking ones that we've had. For me, first and foremost, thank you so much for sharing, and I hope it was okay from your point of view, and that it wasn't too nerve-wracking at the start.
No, yeah, thank you for having me. Obviously, a little bit out of my comfort zone, but as I said in the podcast, you know, it's all about, I've got a support network of people that helped me do this today, and you were wonderful in terms of the questions you asked, and really easy to talk to, so I've really enjoyed it, and I just hope I made some kind of sense, because I do tend to go off on some tangents.
A huge thank you to Olivia for chatting to us on the show. I know we've talked quite a bit about mental health on previous episodes and with previous guests, but for me, I think we touched on quite a few aspects that we haven't really picked apart before. Before I end this particular episode of the podcast, please can I point you in the direction of our social media pages. All of our handles are Sports Fuel Pod, so you can find us there on Twitter, Facebook, or on Instagram. You can also get in touch with us via email. Our address is sportsspielpod@gmail.com. I'm also delighted to say that the Sportspiel squad managed to raise £266 for the Mintridge 771 challenge. I think that then goes into the overall total for the challenge, with all the various squads contributing, and it's around about £3,300 last time I looked, which is a phenomenal effort for everyone involved. Huge thank yous to Ella German, to Kate Borsay, to Tommy Wathen, Nikki Kovach and Laura Gallagher for taking part in our squad along with myself and Will. Our fundraising page is still on our Twitter page if you would like to donate. We would of course be incredibly grateful for anything that you can give to the charity, because it does so much crucial work, and with the current situation as it is, they've obviously lost out on quite a lot of funding at the moment. One last thing, podcast related, and that is our next episode. It is our 100th episode, which is mad, really, thinking about that. We're still not entirely sure how we're going to mark that occasion, but rest assured we will think of something special to bring you on that day. For now, though, listeners, please, please look after yourselves, and you'll be hearing from us very, very soon.